Turning to Proverbs again, and you might open to chapter 5 in particular, where we did read. Last week we were looking at Proverbs as well, and I reminded you that Proverbs is a book of collected wisdom of the teacher, as he is called, where he has spent years reflecting on life, the life of man. But to add to that, to remind you today that it is also a book that applies God's law. We read in Leviticus chapter 18 certain particular applications of what we have summarized in the seventh commandment, you shall not commit adultery. And so are the things taught here, at least some parts of them. You shall not commit adultery. It is spoken of at some length in this chapter 5 and other parts of the book of Proverbs. But along with, and as I said at the beginning, don't be guided just by the inserted heading. That's not God's own word, it's a publisher's word. But within this own chapter and others around it, there are applications of many of the other commandments, in particular to look this morning at the applications of the fifth commandment, honour your father and your mother, the first commandment with promise, we are told elsewhere, so that your days, you will benefit, your days will be long in the land. Perhaps we might also remember the more comprehensive summary of the law, which is in the following chapter, Leviticus chapter 19. Watch out for it, God willing, next week. Love your neighbor as yourself. All of these things have their applications in chapter 5 and other parts around, because, as I said a couple of weeks ago, I'm endeavoring for these few weeks to look at some of the themes that are expounded in the book of Proverbs. Today's subject, adultery, concerns husbands and wives. Honour your father and your mother concerns parents and children. Today's subject is something that has an impact across all of society, and every society, is family relations. First, to consider family relations in marriage, then through the generations, and then also between brothers, as Proverbs speaks, but surely that's also sisters. We'll explain that as we get there. And so first of all, these family relations, and I'm describing this as the foundations of the family. The foundation of the family is to be found in marriage. We begin where God began. When he made man, mankind, he began with man and woman. What does God say about man and woman, man and his wife? What does God say about marriage? Remember Leviticus 18. I am the Lord your God, beginning and end. The things that are within are because I am the Lord your God. God is God. He is our God. He is the God of all men. What does he say about us and how we live in family, in society? Just to pick up, and I will not be comprehensive, there will be parts that Proverbs speaks of that I can't touch on this morning. But what does Proverbs show, first of all, to be the crucial characteristics, even the practical means to be able to fulfill God's own word? When he gave woman to man, he said in Genesis chapter 2, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife. It doesn't just mean that he should leave father and mother, she's been given to him. And so it's a mutual association, and they shall become one flesh. And Jesus applies that in the Gospels, Mark 10, for example, what God has joined together, let not man separate. This is God's word. How does Proverbs expound these things? Well, I think a vitally important thing to notice, and I would take you back to chapter 2 here, is the indication, it's almost an assumption, because he's talking about where there has been a mistake made. But in chapter 2 and verse 17, he says, there is someone there who goes after an immoral woman who forsakes the companion of her youth, and this especially, and forgets the covenant of her God. Now, very often marriage is spoken of as a covenant between a man and a woman. But this reminds us, yes, it is, but it is also a covenant before God, as God ordains, and with God. God is intimately involved in the marriage bond. And that's often been forgotten. It would make a world of difference if that had been recognized in recent debates with what's called same-sex marriage. But people are saying we can do that, we can redefine marriage because God doesn't come into it. But this reminds us God does come into it. And we must remember that when we consider marriage. Young people, not married yet, remember that that's what's involved in the relationship between a man and a woman. That it is something that is done before God. It's not merely a social concept. It's not just because society makes it what we think it is. It's not just tradition. It's because that is what God has appointed. It is a covenant of her God, our God. We need to realize as well the unity that marriage provides. And there are a couple of references. It doesn't say that in so many words, but watch, for example, at the beginning of the book, but also just over the next chapter, chapter 6, for example, and verse 20. And this is the way that the Hebrew poets would write, one line and then another, that reinforces the same point. For example, he's speaking in chapter 6, verse 20, my son, that's who he's speaking to, and then he starts by keep, and the next line says, do not forsake. They mean the same thing, you see. Keep it, don't forsake it. What? First, your father's command. Second, the law of your mother. It's a reminder these things belong together. The father and mother are speaking with one voice. My son, it binds it together. The things that you hear, don't let go of them. What are they? Whether it be the command or the law of your father or your mother. Underlying what the writer says here is, you might even say, the assumption that these words are the same. One voice. Which then reinforces that whole aspect of the closeness and the bond. Remember, the command was, they shall become one flesh, they shall become one, two become one. Perhaps that's why marriage is so often used by God in picturing covenant, the covenant bonds. It's that unity that comes out of two in marriage. And the closeness of companionship. Back in chapter 2, verse 17, we looked at a moment ago. It speaks of the long-term companion of in marriage. Remembering and using the Hebrew word that it speaks of the very closest of relationships between friends. And these things are to bring marriage to life. Marriage is not a thing independent, standing on its own. It's a covenant. It's not a contract. It's personal. It's two people bound together. First in spirit and mind, intellectually, spiritually, but then also in body. And contrast that to the time in which these things were written, where very often the wife was treated as a mere possession. But Proverbs is talking about people who are equal, people who are one and one, becoming one. Wife then was often treated just as a possession, as the Bible puts the woman back in the place where she belongs, in equality with man. Not the same, not identical, but equal. And I do wonder at times, although there's all this talk of equality in our world, if there isn't actually something of the same spirit abroad, where, but it's not just the man treating the wife as a possession. It's both ways now. It is equal in that sense, where it's a commodity. Marriage is a commodity. It's something that you can trade. It can come and it can go. And it's failing to see the personality that is involved in this mutual engagement together. And let's remember where the terminology that we have in front of us is largely to the man. Here, my son, you are going to become a man and commit yourself to your own wife and live out that marriage. But it's not to say that it doesn't work both ways. Both do have a role in this, the life of this marriage. Remember, chapter 2, verse 17 was talking about a woman who had forsaken the companion of her youth. In the chapter that we've been reading, in chapter 5, and from verse 15, there's picture language, a water from your cistern, your fountains, and so on. This is a metaphor, it's a picture of the marriage relationship. And man is especially being warned not to break that covenant. It's speaking about the wife. In verse 18, rejoice with the wife of your youth. The Proverbs is very clear that it's not just a one-way street. The wife is capable of either blessing her husband. Let's maybe just turn to chapter 12 and verse 4. Let's just read the first line of that verse, chapter 12, verse 4. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband. How she can bless her husband. But let's not forget the second part of that verse. She who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones. She can be the destruction of her husband if she's not faithful in the life that they have together. And I don't just mean concerning adultery, it's other aspects of being faithful as well. And then you might be familiar with Proverbs chapter 31. It is too long for us to look at this morning. Maybe we'll be able to do a bit more in that, but it talks about the wife, especially great focus on the wife and the great work that she does and the great blessing that she is to both her husband and her family and the honor that she brings. There's two ways in these relationships in Proverbs. In that day, when often wives were mistreated and there was a great obligation upon men to treat their wives honorably, but there is that full recognition that applies so to our own contemporary world as well. So these are some of the things that we need to remember with regard to marriage. Proverbs teaches us and tells us that there are other parts that relate to this concerning some of the threats and then the responses that we need for the sake of marriage, to maintain this foundation of the family. And those things that we have already looked at are immensely practical. They are the most practical response to any danger to marriage. And it is simply to think properly about what you have. That's missing so often when marriages are harmed and break down. And largely, you might summarize it by saying, view your spouse with honor, whichever way it goes, husbands to wives, wives to husbands, but to think straight. Make sure you're clear. Understand, as God sets out what marriage is for, and the great, immense contribution that it is, that it is a great protection against allowing dangers to threaten and to harm. Think, what are those things that would damage that intimacy, that intimate bond that marriage ought to be? And we might say, and I think perhaps the plainest description of this is summarized when Paul writes to the Corinthians in chapter 7, and he, just let me summarize it by saying it's a failure to contribute to that marriage. He talks about it intellectually, spiritually, but also physically, and in every respect are both parties contributing to this marriage. It's broken down by a damage of trust. That's what adultery brings. But it's not the only way that is damaged, that trust is damaged within a marriage. Now, if anything goes through your mind, yes, it is harming my marriage or a marriage that I know about, let's remember that the first place to look is to our own heart, to our own behavior. And it is a reminder that in this, as in everything else, it is self that is the greatest danger. That it's not about does she look after me or does he look after me? Am I looking after her or him? And then there is the physical, which would appear to be a major focus because it is one of the most obvious, perhaps. It is one of the ways in which men and women slip away so quickly, so easily. It is immensely powerful, the physical. We're surrounded by it. Remember Leviticus 18 again, and the ways that they were being forbidden to follow, because God said, that's what's happening, that's what the people of Egypt were doing, that's what the people of Canaan were doing. You're surrounded by it. Here is a warning. That's not the way to go. We are surrounded by these things, but that doesn't mean if God is our Lord, he is our covenant God, doesn't mean that we go that way. It means that we don't go that way. We cast those things away. And we need to take particular precautions. The physical is a very powerful thing, and that's a large part of the instruction in the early chapters of Proverbs. Beware of it. We are surrounded by it. Set those things in place that you're taking precautions, not allowing looseness to overcome. Chapter 5 tells us of what the consequences are. It tells us that we get into this because of deception. In the third verse, the lips of an immoral woman drip honey. Her mouth is smoother than oil. Sounds so attractive. But it's deception, because in the end she is bitter as wormwood. Goes down to her feet, go down to death. It leads to destruction. In verse 9, if you follow that way, you give your honor to others and your years to the cruel one. The good years. Good years in marriage, or even good years of youth, if they're given over to the immoral woman, the adulterer, and so on. It's a waste that it's speaking about. Chapter 6, 32 talks about committing adultery with a woman. You lack understanding. He who does so destroys his own soul. That's how important marriage is. Chapter 23 talks about giving away your liberty. Our own chapter here, chapter 5, is about intimacy. From verse 19, and you lose this. in chapter verse 20, "For why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman? If she is immoral with you, if you are immoral with someone, how can anyone put their trust in you?" Which intimacy requires. You give away your possessions, even in chapter 6, 26. "By means of a harlot, a man is reduced to a crust of bread, and an adulteress will prey upon his precious life." If you were to look in the world around us, how many people are struggling, needing extra help because they've committed adultery, they've gone after, and they've split up families, and they're having to provide here and there. And it's so true even to our present day. It eats away. In fact, as somebody said, if you were to look just at, for example, the seventh commandment, "You shall not commit adultery," if everyone had kept it and did keep it and does keep it and will keep it, consider how many of society's ills would vanish into thin air. The broken families, the traumas that many people live with through their lives, the great expense, not that I begrudge it to those who are needy, that's not what I mean, but the great expense, the cost to the state in sustaining, providing help and benefits to people with broken families and so on. Whether you look at it economically, psychologically, intellectually, spiritually, in every way, what great harm has been done. Proverbs reminds us of the great damage that comes through a breakdown in marriage, whether in spirit or physically, which is most notable, most recognizable perhaps, but it's not the only way. Marriage as God instituted it. That's the way He began the human race. It's the foundation of strong society. It's the foundation of the family. Through generations, God said, the proverb speaks as well. Beginning with the husband and wife, then the family forms, the society comes out of that. Married couple are the foundation of the family, family the foundation of society. If marriages are shaky, the foundation is shaky, families will be shaky. If families are shaky, society will be shaky. And marriages and family are very shaky today in our society. Perhaps a little wonder, or it ought to be a little wonder, that our society does struggle so often. But it is about family too. It is about parents and children. A truly wonderful relationship. And children might say, well, parents might say, well. But it is. Ask an orphan. How God has ordained, and He's appointed each child to a family. Proverbs is largely concerned with the response of children to parents. You'll see it even in the beginning of this chapter. "My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding." Throughout, the teacher is speaking to the son, to the child, endeavoring to impart wisdom. And it's all based on that presumption. It's not just a parent saying, "I would like you to do this." It's not just a parent speaking on a personal whim. Parents must be sure that this is our voice. Young people, when you become married and parents, be sure that this is your voice, the voice of wisdom. It's not personal preference. Young people, understand that when your parents speak, particularly Christian parents who are seeking to follow God's way and to take you in that way. Understand. When you hear, listen. When you listen, understand. They're intending to help. God often spoke to Israel as his children. And remember how Israel responded to his words. By and large, the bulk of their history, they refused to hear. But he said in the prophet Jeremiah, yes, towards the end of their Old Testament history, he said, I know the thoughts that I think toward you, as their father, loving father. I know the thoughts that I think toward you, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope. That's the word of particularly a Christian parent to their children. A few chapters later, wisdom is speaking. Chapter 8, for whoever finds me finds life. That wisdom that your parents are seeking to convey to you. You find me, you find life itself. You obtain favor from the Lord. But he who sins against me, wisdom, wrongs his own soul. All those who hate me love death. That's the basis on which these words are given. That should be the basis on which parents teach and guide their children. That should be the basis on which the children hear their parents. Proverbs has no illusions, though. Apparently, it ought not to be said today, but it shows more about our day than it does about God's word. We're not to tolerate to say we're born in sin. The world won't tolerate that. But we are born in sin. Proverbs tells us, chapter 22, foolishness, which is sin, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. That's how the way we begin. Proverbs 22:15. That's our beginning. That's our default setting. No illusions. And it's then that Proverbs says something terribly politically incorrect, that the rod of correction will drive it, that foolishness, far from him. Now, of course, that scares everybody. But it's making the point that sometimes you do need young people, and all of us have been young, if we're not still. We need something more than words. That rod is not to be self-centered on the parent's side. It's not to be disproportionate. But Proverbs 29 says, the rod and rebuke give wisdom. What's the alternative? The same verse, 15. But a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. The mother leaves him to do what he pleases, leaves him to go his own way, and suffers shame as a result. Needs instruction, and it may be accompanied with a rod, something that does teach that lesson. It's better to learn soon, not to mourn folly later in life. Chapter 5, where we've been reading. That's why we read this chapter, not all those other parts. From verse 7, therefore hear me now, my children, do not depart from the words of my mouth. Remove your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honour to others and your years to the cruel one. And then through to verse 11, and lest you do these things, and you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed. And you will be saying, because you have not listened, because you child have not heard, you will say, verse 12, how I have hated instruction, and my heart despised reproof. I have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to those who instructed me. I was on the verge of total ruin in the midst of the congregation and assembly. Why? It's not because there was a lack of instruction and guidance and wisdom. It's because you didn't take it. The teaching that is given teaching that must be given from parents to children to equip for to be sure in life. Chapter 3, verses 21 to 24. My son, let them, these instructions, let them not depart from your eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion, so they will be life to your soul and grace to your neck. Then you will walk safely in your way, and your foot will not stumble. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. Yes, you will lie down, and your sleep will be sweet. That's a wonderful blessing. But how? It's because you do not let the words of wisdom depart from your eyes. Parents must be sure that this is the teaching that is given. But Proverbs further sets out the truth. Very real to life, even with the best teaching. The question remains, what will the son or the daughter do with it? And chapter 13, the first verse, a wise son heeds his father's instructions, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Which way will you go, children who hear wisdom? Other parts of Proverbs speak of despising it, mocking it, scorning, cursing parents in response to what they would teach. But remember what I said a moment ago. Chapter 29 tells us a child left to himself brings shame. Yes, sometimes a parent who hasn't taught well is haunted by the results, and haunted because it's the children who are suffering. But finally, Proverbs is laced through with the principle that it's up to you. Wisdom is taught. What are you doing with it? Do you love it or do you despise it? It's crucial to the strength of the family, which is crucial to the strength of society. Let's hear and strive for those families of joy. Chapter 17 has it at verse 6. Children's children, grandchildren, are the crown of all men, and the glory of children is their father. It works both ways. So their father or grandfather can enjoy his children or grandchildren, and the children honour their father and their mother. I must touch very briefly on the other aspect of the family, brothers and sisters, but it's actually more than that still. There are very few references to it in Proverbs, except very often in combination comparison, as it were, with friends, which we spoke of last week. Brothers is a Bible word that means the blood brother that we often think of ourselves. It includes sisters, but it includes more extended family as well, as you'll still find in many cultures today. So it means that if you are a brother as we know it, you've got things to learn. If you're brothers and sisters, you've got things to learn. If you're cousins and more extended family too. Proverbs talks about some of the diseases in the wider family. It speaks in chapter 19 of the poor relation who is hated, rebuffed, because he's poor, because he doesn't have anything to bring to the party, you might say. And there are so many cases like that. Proverbs is a reflection on the experience of life. It talks about bitter feuds within families, chapter 18. Contentions within the family are like bars of a castle. So if you want to overcome, think about tactics in breaking through into a castle and winning it over. But it sets them out because of their how unsavory these things are, how unsuitable they are to a family. But it also talks about healthy family, more extended as well as a close family. Chapter 17 speaks of a brother born for adversity. That was joined with an expression of the help of a friend, a true friend. a brother born for adversity. And when friends are described in their greatest qualities, it is in relation to a brother. The praise, the term of praise, is he's even closer than a brother, reminding us how good it is to have brothers who are close. As it is in all societies, Paul spoke in Romans 12, if it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men, so surely also in family as well. Where God has joined us together, even in our siblings, our extended family, let us not separate. These ought not to be come under harm. Now, I must close. God set us in families, as well as a family relationship to himself, father and children. From the very beginning, Satan wanted to separate us. He did then, at the beginning, he continues to do so. He will do everything he can, whether it's an immoral woman, a whisperer who separates friends, somebody who comes in and misunderstands their poor relative, and there's a breakdown and so on. Satan is at work to divide. And the dangers, friends, are great. In marriage, in parent-child relationships, in brotherly relationships, in every way, the dangers are great. He has been very effective throughout the world and through the generations. And he is very effective. We might not be under what we often think of as persecution here, but we're in a world, in a society, where Satan is very much at work. And he is targeting families especially, targeting marriages, because it is crucial to coherent society, which is an environment in which God's word is lived and will be heard, at least more so. But it's not just society around, it's us. It's us here in this room and our families, our relationships. How are we dealing with it? Husbands and wives. At first glance, Proverbs seems especially to be talking to the husband. Be careful. Guard what you have. But it applies on both sides, husbands and wives. Parents and children, guard what you have in every combination of these relationships. Brothers and sisters too. Because all of these are in God's plan. How do we know? Because he has put us into these families. It's God's plan. He only thinks what's good. Let's maintain, sustain, and protect and guard what he provides for us. And in every word that he teaches, let us be careful not to neglect, because that is to scorn his wisdom. And so it is to gather it all together in chapter 4, verse 10. Hear, my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. Honor your father and your mother. Do not commit adultery. And Proverbs sets before us the ways of man, but calls us and summons us to hear God's ways and the ways of wisdom in these things.